And we'll see what we're going to do. Okay.
Am I upside down?
Wow, that's cool. You're upside down, which would be great for Vinahafoku, but it would be no holiday. Okay, guys. First of all, learning in the shul this week is graciously sponsored by the Moskowitz family in memory of Bob's father and Rachel's father. So then Shamos should have an aliyah. And, of course, our learning tonight should serve as a sechus aliyas neshama. I also want to remind you that though I had promised, and I am not backing off the promise, that one of our topics from last week will make a reappearance, I thought maybe a good Hanukkah shiur would be useful, since it is, after all, the first night of Hanukkah, and I hope that you're all getting the opportunities. I just took a break from making my crazy concoctions known as latkes, but those concoctions are different, and I hope you also have exciting tastes of latkes. There are so many different cool things you can do, and then just attach a flavor to it. And, you know, that's what Yiddish Pet should be about. It should be an opportunity to take a chance and add a ruach or a flavor to everything that we're doing to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim. And that's why it's fascinating. In the last couple of months, we've seen all these different chatlists about COVID come up. I was typing up my notes for the shiur on Tuesday, and I thought I really was like all finished, and I really got the two questions that I wanted to put up for a vote, and I worked it all out, and then presto, what happened? What happened was I get a note in my box yesterday at like midnight, you know, hey, Rav so-and-so has an interesting position. So I went back to look over there, and it always makes for excitement when you see that, you know, we're at least this year, we're at the forefront of looking at halachic shilas. And that's what we like to do here. We just like to take a look at them, and now we're watching them develop literally in real time. I'll give you a for instance. Let's talk about two options tonight. First of all, option number one. We've been davening in all sorts of strange locations due to the COVID-19 epidemic, including in widespread rooms throughout the shul, and yes, even outside. And I was wondering, should we be lighting outdoors in the tent minyanim this year when we gather for davening? And what about if we're davening in a room in the shul or in a school, but not in the main sanctuary? So that's question number one is, you know, when you're lighting in shul, where do you light? Question number two actually came in from somebody who had a very serious problem. My husband has been diagnosed with COVID-19. He has, under the direction of the doctors, entered quarantine in our home. He has his own room and bathroom, which is pretty much what the doctors do encourage us to do. When somebody in the home has to quarantine due to COVID, you want to try to give them their own space, their own bathroom, so that this way spread is not going to be a potential problem. He doesn't leave those areas. And we keep him away from everyone and deliver food to his room. We knock on the door and then we move away, period. With Hanukkah coming, or at this point with Hanukkah upon us, right, we were wondering if he lights for himself in the room and we don't see the candles, do we need to light elsewhere? Or can we be Yotze with him anyway? And what about him? Is he even Yotze if no one sees his candles? And then later today, I realized I wanted to add a third element, which is, and even if not, can we see the candles via Zoom? Just like our share, right? Does that help or not help? Does it help one way or another? So we've got the husband in quarantine, menorah shaila, and we also have the where do I light in a shul shaila, and which shuls demand lighting. So which of the two should we start with? Does either one grab your fancy?
Huh? They both sound good. They both sound good.
Okay, so let's start. If that's the case, I'm going to start with the second one first, with the quarantine question, because to be perfectly fair and honest, it was a question that came across my desk, right? The first question came about as a result of a conversation I had with someone in the community who was just wondering. And the second one, I think, is like really, really there. Do I have to, my husband is in quarantine. He has his own room and bathroom. He doesn't leave the areas. Right. Nobody sees it. Can he, if he lights for himself, do we have to relight? Let me just add, for Ashkenazim, this might not be as much of an issue. And that's what your husband's about to say. So what do you mean? What's the big deal? So light a second Chanukiah. Ah, but here's where the things get exciting, Doc. What if we're dealing with a Sfaradi? A Sfaradi who has the traditions in the Sephardic community are to light Mahadrin and Amahadrin, one person in the home. In fact, one of our dear friends, I'm recording, so I won't identify directly whom, but one of our dear friends in our shir, in our morning shir, is a Sephardi. And I asked him once, do your kids really not light Hanukkah? And he said they had a long discussion. His wife's an Ashkenazi, and they decided that for now they're going to paskin Ashkenaz until the kids are old enough to understand that that's, as he jokingly says to me, until our kids are old enough to understand that that's wrong. Right. So I thought that was cute, you know, a cute way of putting it. And also, would Zoom help at all in this instance? And so let's take it apart. What do we need to consider when we're talking about this question or this series of questions, this scenario?
Well, what's the difference between looking something through a glass or seeing it through Zoom?
Okay, so you're starting with the last question first. You're asking me, is there a difference between looking at something through glass or through Zoom? And why are you making that distinction? Let's just hold that on the side. But why are you making the distinction so I understand? Doc? Why are you making the distinction?
Because everybody on the outside sees our menorah through a glass.
Right.
And even in the old city, they put their menorah in a glass and it's outside, outdoors.
Right. So are they
seeing it directly? Are they seeing it as directly as I'm seeing it through Zoom? If somebody else does it via Zoom?
Okay. So very good. So one issue that we have to look at is when a person is looking at something, does it make a difference for Pirsume Nisa, which is the big discussion you're sort of swirling around? If I'm looking at something directly or indirectly, if I cause somebody to look at the Chanukiah, at the menorah, so maybe that makes a difference or not. We'll have to figure that out. Anything else we need to know? For this guy in quarantine, the guy's in quarantine, right?
He has no windows?
Let's assume he has no windows for the sake of the conversation.
All I know is lighting a Chanukiah is a Dirabanan. And we've been talking a lot of the difference between the Araitas and the Dirabanan. In the Medina, in the Harabayit, etc., how the rules are different and all that. The key issue is V'chai Bahem. If he will be more relaxed knowing that he could light in his room, and even say a bracha, and he will feel better about it, which will affect his machshava and the outcome. That's a big point.
So once again, I'm with you. I think that's great. I'm going to get back to that point as well. So we've got two big points for Dr. Wenger. Point number one is Pirsumei Nisa, who says that it involves me seeing something directly. Point number two, he says, is we got to do something over here for this guy. And it's so fascinating because to me, when I first saw one of the Mefarshim, one of the Poskim, we're talking about people who are walking on 2 feet today. COVID-19 is going on now, right? And he made a point very similar to yours. I was like blown away by the sensitivity of the Posek, which I should have just realized, I should be blown away by the sensitivity of Dr. Wenger, that he, you know, it was like a sort of end to a Jew. I'm looking at this saying, come on, Rabbi, let's get to the end point. And he's like, wait a second, this is his end point. And I'll get back to that point as well. Yeah, the one thing that Dr. Wenger is carefully avoiding is the question of whether the Sephardic wife should relight the candles or not, right, in this situation. I've been watching. You answered the questions you felt like answering, and you put the other ones on the side, which is good. By the way, very smart. But let's take the question apart again, Dina, just to catch you up. So we have this situation where our husband is in Bidur. We made the question a little bit tougher by making sure that we identified the family as Sephardic. Why is that important? Because Sephardim don't usually. It's Ner Ishu Beito. Right? So is it better for him? Is he considered part of the house? And can he be motzi everybody else, even if he has no idea? That is to say that others can't see it. Does it help if the others watch on Zoom? Should they light the other candles? That's the question we're dealing with. And we have to understand let's go back to Gemara. So I could easily call on Deborah and ask her to refer back from our daf shir. But Hanukkah is great because we just got out of Masechta Shabbos. And of course, early on in Masechta Shabbos, way, way, way back when, but not long enough that it wasn't COVID time, because we were already in COVID when we were doing these Gemaras, right? The mitzvah of Neros Chanukah, the Gemara says in Shabbos, Chaf Aleph Amid Beis, is mitzvasa mishetish kachama ad shetech l'regel menashuk. The time frame for the mitzvah of lighting candles on Hanukkah is from the Shkia until people stop walking. Now, in the marketplace, normally that's a very funky way of putting time. Usually we would say from Shkia to Tzeis. Right? We take one thing that's very set. Sunset is a set time. And Tichla Rego Menashuk seems to be not so set. So there's a discussion as to whether the Gemara is over there, when the Gemara is debating, is the Gemara debating what the proper time to light the candles is? Or is the Gemara really coming along to tell you how long the candles have to remain lit? In other words, is this time frame, Mishetish Kachama Hachet Tichla Rego Menashuk, from the time of sunset until people leave the marketplace, is that how long my menorah has to last? P.S. About a half an hour, right? Or is the Gemara telling us, no, that's the right time to light, to light rather. And so it would follow that, if you argue that it's how long my menorah should last, then I guess I should be lighting, even if I light later. My son came home late from yeshiva tonight. So by the time he got home, it was 7 o'clock. It's well past the zman tichla rego menashuk, right? But do I have to make sure that his candle stayed lit for a half an hour, or which would have been the equal amount of time had he lit on time? Or is it, no, it just has to be lit and then it can go out on its own? So the Rambam in Hilchos Chanukah, Perek Del Achahei, the Rambam says we assume the first position. What's the first position? Listen to his language. He says, what happens if a person just didn't light at sunset? You can keep lighting in the optimal time from until people stop walking around. How long does it take from sunset until people leave the market? It's about 30 minutes. Says the Rambam, and listen to these next couple of words because they'll blow your mind, including my son's. If you've missed that second half an hour, 7 o'clock, right, well past the 5:45 end time, so you don't light candles. The Rambam says, very frankly, if you missed it, you don't light. You don't light. Tosis and the Rush come along and say, what's he talking about? Right? You can light later. The only thing is, what the Gemara is telling us is that when you light, the duration of the period of lighting, how long the candles have to be lit, that should be the amount of time, the same parallel amount of time as from sunset until people leave the market, those 30 minutes. There is a third position, Emosh, right? There is a third opinion, the opinion of the Rashba, who says that you can also light with a bracha later. Even if you can light past the time, even if you hold like the Rambam, but you just didn't do the mitzvah in the right time. There's a right time. And that's what the Rambam's trying to tell us, says the Rashba, right? There's a right time. The right time to light the candles is in that time, that first half an hour. So, but you may not have done the mitzvah in the ideal way. You may not have achieved Pursume Nisa, which is what Dr. Wenger was talking about before, but the mitzvah of hadlaka, the idea of lighting the candles, that you certainly did achieve. Now, the benefit of the Rashba is critical for us, because what the Rashba just did was he recognized that this lighting of the menorah that we thought was this one big mitzvah, that you have to light it at the same time that people are around or there's no purpose, the Rashba just said, not so fast. What is the mitzvah? The mitzvah of lighting the candles, there's a mitzvah called hadlaka saneros, lighting the candles. And there's a second part of the mitzvah called pirsume nisa. They don't necessarily have to coexist. We can look at them as separate. And so therefore, if a person doesn't have an option of lighting the candles and achieving pirsume nisa, he can achieve one without the other. This is not such a crazy idea for us, because the very same Gemara that Devorah mentioned before from Masechta Shabbos, a couple of pages later, talks about something called Birkas HaRoeh. What happens if a person is not able to light the actual menorah. What do we say for the person? We tell him or her, when you pass by somebody else who's lighting, Haroa Neiros Chanukah, if you see the candles, you should make the bracha sha'asa nisim lavoseinu bayamim mahim basman hazeh. So there is such a concept of birchas haroa, which would seem to support this position of the Rashba that pirsume nisa and hadlakas neiros, two separate ideas. She just mentioned that the Bala, just to square off the early opinions of the Rishonim, the Re holds that you can light even later because the people at home can replace the people in the street. Like, think about it. So you come home, right? Maybe there's nobody out in the streets. Corona. We want people to be, spend more time at home. But there are more people I've come into contact in my own home. When I light candles at home, it's an event, right? Maybe there's just as much Pursume Nisa there. And so the Re seems to suggest that you can achieve Pursume Nisa even later. So in summation, maybe we can light again later because of one of these four possibilities, right? It could be, says the Tosis in the Rush, that there's no time. There's no set time frame. It's just the question of that time frame that the Gemara discussed was not about what the right time to light is, but rather how long you need to light. Then there's the Rashba who says that, no, it's only a question of the ideal. But if you miss the ideal, so light later. It could be that, like we just mentioned in the name of the Re, that Pursume Nisa can be achieved in your own home, even if you miss the people walking in the street. And it could be that Achetech L'Rega Manashuk, today, in the modern times, maybe a lot longer. Malls are open later. We do 24-hour, going to 7-Eleven is a 24-hour deal, right? If you're in Brooklyn, you can get caramel donuts, pretty much until 1:30 in the morning, right? By the way, if you know anyone who's, no, I won't go that far. Right? I need to watch the weight. But the bottom line is the Shulchan Aruch, especially since I just made four different types of latkes. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosis and the Rush, right? And the Shulchan Aruch paskins like Tosis and the Rush, and the Rambam paskins like the Re. That is to say, nobody paskins like the Rambam that you're stuck, right? In other words, if you didn't keep the right time, if you didn't get the light in the right frame, the Shulchan Aruch says, just make sure you have enough oil to last you 30 minutes. The Rambam says, well, the people in your house, as long as household members are up, you can light with a bracha, and otherwise you shouldn't light with a bracha. By the way, just to mention, Rav Ovadia Yosef in Chazon Ovadia says that even if the kids are still sleeping, you can still make the bracha. You still get, there's still an opportunity. Mr. Brewer suggests if somebody could be woken up so that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Hadlaka Sanir, you should go ahead and do so. Okay. Now, it also follows that Rav Moshe Feinstein in Igros Moshe Or HaChaim Chelek Dalet Simen Kuf Hei Sivkat and Zion, remember that Igros Moshe, it's going to come back again on Shabbos afternoon to deal with a much, much bigger American civil liberty question, right? Yes, Rav Moshe Shailos on Hanukkah do help with my rights and what's right, right? So Rav Moshe quotes many who seem to suggest that Pursume Nisa is not part of the mitzvah of lighting. And so therefore, if everyone's sleeping, go light, just like we saw in the name of Rav Ovadia. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, there's Pursume Nisa for you too. Don't forget yourself, right? You're lighting the candle. You can benefit from the candle. So he also would say, so for sure, you go ahead and you make the bracha. So now let's go back to our guy in Bidud, right? With all of these positions all together. Can the guy in Bidud, no windows, no nothing, can he light the Neiros Chanukah?
Well, certainly for lighting it.
How about
make a distinction between
Pursume. It's a Pursume Nisa for himself.
I don't want to start a battle between the Wengers, but quite frankly, based on what we've discussed so far, it sounds like certainly he can light the candles. That goes without saying. Can he make the bracha Sha'asa Nisim? 100%. Why? Because at least according to Rav Moshe Feinstein and according to Rav Ovadia Yosef, according to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, we'll probably built off that Rashba that we mentioned before, is Pursume Nisa for yourself, all right? And so therefore, you would go ahead and make the bracha, right? Now, Rav Rimon from Har Etzion, a fantastic Talmud Chacham, he sent out a note this week on one of the chats that I belong to called the Rav Rimon chat. And he said, hey, take a look at this. This is the new Shaila. And I was like shocked, like, wow, take a look at that. Rav Rimon had, you know, is dealing with the same question I'm dealing with, right? And he turns around and he says, it becomes very evident in my opinion that even if no one else is going to see the candles, it would be better for him to light candles on time. In other words, in that time frame, just to cover the Rambam. But he says, and it would be better if he has a window to light the candles in the window. But quite honestly, if he does not have the ability to do so, certainly he can light those candles. I also get the opportunity monthly to get an update to all the questions that Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein, the great brother-in-law of Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky and Talmud Chacham of first rate in his own right, all the ones that he gets. So in this month's edition that also came to me this week, in the Vavei Amudim Kislev Tashin Pei Aleph edition on page 110, right, Rabbi Zilberstein also says this is no worse than the case of a different Hanukkah person called an Achsanai. What's an Achsanai? In the olden days, olden days being pre-COVID, we'd invite guests over. How many times do we wind up having the shul be a fraction of the size on Hanukkah? Because a lot of our young people will go to this parent or that place or this opportunity. So, you know, when you're in somebody else's house for Hanukkah, you have the status of an Achsanai, right? And if the husband is the one who's away, he can rely on his wife to light for him. If you look, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in the FAQ for the Elizabeth Jewish community that I had the pleasure of writing together with Rav Kites a long time ago, one of the things that I updated and sent it out from year to year. So I remember discussing that with Rabbi Kites, and he was very, very clear that, what are you talking about? Straight up halacha, there's a din called Achsanai. Right, and so a man doesn't have to be there. He's going to be in the office till 12 o'clock at night. He wants his wife to light for him. Can he do it? Oh, it's pretty clear that he can do it. He's not going to see the candles.
But that's for Ashkenazim. What about the Sfaradim?
Sfaradim too. The din of an Achsanai, Devorah will tell you, appears very clearly in Masechta Shabbos. It's not. It predates the split of Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, right? No. Yeah, so therefore, it certainly seems that the wife and the husband, if they're away from each other for whatever reason, each one can rely on the other one, even though nobody can see it can see one another. The only question is whether both of them can light if each one plans on being motzi the other. The wife's like, oh, I'll do my husband a favor, I'll light on time, and he's thinking the same thing from wherever he is. So in that situation, Rav Steinman Zatzal felt that a wife is always Yosei with her husband's lighting, Yishto Gugufo, she probably shouldn't be the one to do the lighting, because it's like sort of de facto expected that he would be the one to do the lighting. But another great B'nai Brak Posik, Rav Nissen Karelet Zatzal, says, what are you talking about? Husband has to light the candles, the wife has to light the candles. Ah, fein, are you? Oh, so anis. And so therefore the question is, who's motzi whom? Who makes the bracha first? It's as simple as that. But the Mishnah Berurah in Shaar HaTzion in Taf Reish, Ayin Vav, Sifkat Nyud, adds that if she hears the brachos, then for sure she is Yotzei with him. Well, it would follow, therefore, that if he is in Bidud and she hears the brachos, does she have to go ahead and light again?
No.
Worse than Achsenai, says Rav Zilberstein. And so here too, if she is the brachos, even if she doesn't see the candles, she doesn't have to relight, right? And he doesn't need someone to see his candles. And despite the quarantine, Hanukkah teaches us, to handle it. So it's funny, when Rav Rimon sent out his tshuva, the last paragraph in the tshuva goes ahead and makes one of the points that Dr. Wenger made before. Now, Rav Rimon is an incredibly wise posek. He's also an incredibly sensitive posek. Most posek can tend to be pretty sensitive individuals. So he writes in the last paragraph, after going through his element of the tshuva that he was looking at, he says, one of the things that we're finding in the midst of COVID is that the word bidud, the idea that we're all alone, badad yeshev, he says, one of the most important things we need to do during the period of Hanukkah is remind each other that we're not alone, that we have elements going on all around us. And he says, if you can get that idea across, by not having to say, no, you're all alone, you're left to fend for yourself, but rather you're part of something bigger, like the candles. We're all going to be a part. He says, maybe it's not such a bad thing. And definitely one thing that's certainly not a bad thing is to strengthen one another in the process. Now, all this was said and done. Everything was finished. I was so proud of myself. And when I sent out the questions yesterday, every last piece was finished, except for one thing. Today, I get my notes from Rav Zilberstein's weekly share. I'm sorry, from Rav Asher Weiss's, Hagona Rav Asher Weiss's weekly share. And it's wonderful because it comes in like Hebrew and English and typed up and transcripted. And you want it in French. I'm sure I could get it in French. It's great. But I get the Hebrew version in transcript also. And so here I am this morning. I'm getting ready to print my notes. And then all of a sudden I see, oh, look, this week's share is Shailus Uchuvos Lechanukah Mishum Corona. Okay, that sounds pretty relevant. Let me take a look. Maybe he's got a good one. I'll add a third one in for the week. And he has. He has some great ones, but it happens to be that all three were the ones I prepared for a different shiurim this week. But he goes into the Zoom question that Dr. Wenger addressed before, and I think it's relevant to our issue at hand, and I think that it's kedai to answer. Way back when, once upon a time, we had a shaila. And what was the shaila? Pesach was coming. Even before Pesach, I was talking to Rav Teitz. Rav Teitz, for the first time, he says to me, since March 13th, he davened two tefillos in the main shul in North Avenue Shul. For the first time since March 13th, he's been davening in all these other places, primarily our tent. Tonight, he davened in shul for the first time with a lot of precautions and all the other pieces. And he says to me, you know, do you remember March 13th? March 13th was before Purim. Right? He says he gave the share. It was right after Purim. I'm sorry. It was before Parshas Parah. He says, I gave my share. I davened Shacharis. And then it was done. Right? And so he said, you know, way back when Purim was an issue, and none of us really were really such big sticklers on Zoom. Who would have, Zoom became, I think, the word of the year. Right? If you had to pick one word that has had any impact in a different way. Nobody knew about Zoom on March 13th, except for Orthodox Jews. Why? Because there was a little community called New Rochelle. And in the New Rochelle Jewish community, there was a major question because they were getting walloped with COVID at that point in time. And so questions came up about how to be Yotzei the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah. This touched off a huge genre of COVID-related shailos and tshuvos and halachos. Is the volume of work is certainly something that we paid attention. I showed you my blue folder. I have a black one as well now. So back then, Rav Asher Weiss pointed out that he feels that there's a fundamental difference between two different types of religious activity over Zoom. He says, when it comes to putting 10 people together to make a minyan, in other words, something that we would call a davar shebikdusha. So he says, you can't have a davar shebikdusha recited unless the 10 people are together. Zoom is not one of those things. However, one of the other things that quickly became an issue in the next 3 weeks, starting around, around March 13th, people were coming off ventilators. People were coming out of hospitals slowly, right? Hopefully, and they were having shyness about doing something else. Somebody who's sick who comes out of the hospital, what does he or she have a responsibility to do? That's right. They bench Gomel. Very good, Moshe, right? So the shyness became, well, what do I do about benching Gomel? Normally, we want to bench Gomel in a big crowd. We want to tell God, thank God, right? I'm saved. Pirsum Hanis, right? This is not a new thing. Benching Gomel replaces the Karban Todah. And the Karban Todah specifically came with 40 different loaves of bread. Well, not loaves, but some were chametz, some were matzah, some were rekikim, some were revuchim. And the amount of time that you had to eat that stuff was shorter than other karbanos. And why is that? So the Mefarshei HaChumash explained. God wanted to make it such that you would have to invite people to partake of your carbon. Because you know what happens? When you come to me and you say to me, come to my house, I want to, you know, come to my my little corner in the Beis HaMikdash or on Har HaBayis for my Suda of Hoda'ah, right? Why are you making a Suda of Hoda'ah? Let me tell you, I was sick and I got out of it. So God saved me. He gave me something healthy to eat. So in that situation, people would be Mefarsei Mesanis. So we try very hard to go ahead and bench Gomel in a group. We try to do it with a minion. However, what happens if you can't? So Rav Asher said, Birchas HaGomel is not a Davar Shebetusha. It just needs 10 to fulfill a different responsibility, which is you will remove a kalam to thank God in front of a crowd. So Rav Asher said, in front of a crowd doesn't necessarily mean in front of a minion. So I find that in the last number of months, you can have a much bigger crowd on Zoom than you can have in certain places that people get together. I've been to weddings where the wedding itself may have had 15 people, 20 people, and 400 on Zoom. Right? The family wasn't going to have a 425-person wedding. That's astronomical numbers. But now, because it was all on Zoom, it was able to be done. People were able to come and participate in the simcha. Which of the two places are you publicizing the miracle even more? So it sounds to me that Zoom would be a great opportunity. And so when an old man or an old lady wants to go ahead and light her Hanukkah candles with her whole family around, because that's what they do all the time. And now the family wants to know, can she do that over Zoom? Or is that going to be a problem? The answer is a problem. It's certainly not. Based on everything that we're saying, it's certainly not. What Rav Asher writes is, I certainly don't think that it's a problem. One thing I could say is that it might even be an ideal, right? Certainly between doing it by yourself in quiet versus lighting the candles on the Zoom in front of the other family members. First of all, again, it will bring the simcha to the family member who always hosts a big Motzei Shabbos or Sunday night Hanukkah party and now can't. And now he or she wants to be able to light it on Zoom. We're all going to watch. And we're all going to sing Mosur. And we're going to sing it in those crazy tunes that we all have as our own family traditions. And we're all going to have a latke thing and a game night and a kahoot and who gives a hoot and what a hooting humming, whatever the case may be. But a piersum hanes to go ahead and say in the process, the person is certainly publicizing the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You certainly don't lose in the process. That's for sure. And that was Rav Asher's addition to our subject at hand. So in summation, and we'll close it out over here, right? Can the person light in bidud? Yes. Can his wife fulfill her obligation? Absolutely. It's no different than the Achsanai, right? Can Zoom help? Yeah. And of course, as Dr. Wenger said, and Rav Rimon certainly agreed, we want to do what we can, especially during these times, to make people aware that we are not alone. Just because people ask. So here, as far as the first question is concerned, here we got into a much bigger difference of opinion. The first question, again, do you light candles in a place that's not an actual shul? So here, actually, we get into a much bigger discussion as to why people light in shul to begin with. And if so, what makes a shul? So many of the poskim seem to feel that if everyone's getting together to daven, right, that makes something into a shul, especially if you have a structure, some sort of structure that sort of becomes like a tent or a gazebo, right, that sort of unites people and is there purely for the purposes of davening. So let's say the tent, Allah Shalom, that used to be at Gan Yonina, right? So that would have been a place where it could be argued that maybe that was a tent that was set aside. That's one of the positions that Rav Yashiv and Rav Chaim Kanievsky all seem to be quote, and Rav Zilberstein, they all seem to quote, a person would be able to light. And certainly it sounded like Rav Asher also, in this shir that he sent today, that he would agree that maybe, as long as people are davening in the place, this would be an acceptable practice. What was interesting was earlier this week, and I was thinking about this today, Mori Virabi, Rav Schechter, put out a piece, and he's been, his Talmidim have been gathering his Shilas and Tshuvas and they sort of highlighted his tshuvas together. So when he wrote the most recent one, number 57, Rishabtis said that no, the main idea is a Zeichel HaMikdash. That the understanding is when you're lighting in a shul, you're lighting Zeichel HaMikdash. That is only true in the actual place where you actually daven. There should only be one such place in shul, one shul, where that, you know, in the building, and only that permanent room is where a person needs to daven. But if you're learning anywhere, if you're davening anywhere else, there's no need to go ahead and make brachos and light the candles there at all. And he felt pretty strongly about that, especially if you're davening in any other place that doesn't have an establishment as a shul. It's fascinating to me when you think about that, because if you know anything about Rav Schachter's opinions on matters concerning shuls, he does not make the determination of shul. I haven't had a chance to discuss this with him or his son yet, but Rav Schachter has a piece where he talks about Kedushas Beis HaKnesses. And he assumes that having permanent structures, that's what makes the shul into a shul. Not the fact that people get together there davening. It's one of the reasons why, and I believe he bases himself off of Chasam Sofer, but that's why he feels that when the Aron Kodesh is in a separate area, the old shuls, and by the way, just parenthetically, the Elmore Avenue main shul, right? If you ever walk into the JC through the back door and you look up and you see this sort of like bubble, you know, coming out of the wall, that's the Aron Kodesh, right? So Rav Schachter is of the opinion that technically speaking, that's its own rishus. It's its own place, which sort of changes the nature of the room itself that they daven. And Rav Schachter said, so again, for him, the structure of it makes a difference as to a place of Zeichel HaMikdash. The other poskim are of a different position. They say the whole point of a shul is where people gather to daven. If they're gathering to daven, it's true, there is a Zeichel HaMikdash aspect, but the bigger issue is Pursumei Nisa. And since the bigger issue is Pursumei Nisa, so what difference does it make if it's in a gazebo, or if it's in where people get together to daven, or whether it's in the actual shul itself? So here we get into differences of opinion. I did not discuss the issue, the second issue with Rav Teitz, but one thing I can tell you is he did not ask me to give him a Hanukkah menorah for the places where he's davening. Currently, he's not, other than in Chamayr, he's not davening in the main shul. And so therefore, I would imagine that he's probably going to be lenient and not light in the minyan location that he's davening in. Okay, so now we've covered two. It's a big deal for us. And, you know, and may you all just enjoy a Freilich and Chanukah, a Lichtige Chanukah, and a Chanukah that in the past brought us from tough times into the times that were filled with light. And Be'ezras Hashem, they will do so. La'ihudim ha'isa ora v'simcha v'sasom v'ikar, kein tialanu. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos and a Lichtige Chanukah. Be well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
You're good.
An enlightening, colorful Shabbos.
And my dear friends Wangers, happy belts.
Yes.